to The Divine Breadcrumb with your hosts, Carol Campos and Deb Sorensen. Carol and Deb have always believed the universe helps people on their path by sending signs, clues, or what they call divine breadcrumbs. A divine breadcrumb can create both small and massive shifts in a person's life. On this podcast, Carol and Deb will speak with authors, healers, entrepreneurs, and other amazing people across the globe to discuss these pivotal moments. So get ready to learn, to love, and to laugh. And remember, the universe always provides if you allow it to. Enjoy the show.
Hi, it's Carol, co-host of The Divine Breadcrumb. This episode is brought to you by Carol L. Campos Coaching. Why coach with me when there are so many coaches out there? I do things differently. I don't jump right into your goal. Why? Well, what I've learned is that the subconscious mind is running 90% of the show. That's where we start. We clear any emotional blocks and limiting beliefs first, making sure you know your why and are aligned with where you're headed before tackling your goal. Whether you want to change careers or simply want more joy in your life, I can teach you strategies to help you gain the clarity needed to go where your heart is calling. To get started, I invite you to sign up for a free discovery session at carollcampos.com. Together, let's light your path. Hello, everyone. I'm Carol.
This is Deb. Welcome back to The Divine Breadcrumb.
Yes, welcome back. So why is living mindfully so important? Today, we're talking about just that with our guest, Monse Azaguirre. Monse is the founder of Mindful Living and, as the name would suggest, is an expert in mindfulness. It all started when she experienced postnatal anxiety. And during this time, she turned to meditation and mindfulness and found that it was life-changing. Now Monse works to help others realize the power of mindfulness in their own lives. Through her one-on-one coaching, corporate coaching, her Rogue Minds online magazine, as well as her YouTube channel, Monse helps to bring about peace and happiness in our lives and in the workplace. Monse has this lovely energy and it comes right through your monitor. Even going to her website, you feel like you've entered this tranquil spa. So there's so much to talk about. So let's get started. Welcome, Monse.
Thank you, Carol and Deb. I feel very privileged that you've actually asked me to come onto your show. It's a beautiful space.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I think to start off, to help our listeners, how would you define mindfulness? Maybe tell us a little bit about what happened during your postnatal anxiety and how that led to what you're doing now. It sounds like you had a major divine breadcrumb in your life.
Yes, indeed. Probably the biggest divine breadcrumb in actual fact. So basically, a little history is that for 20 years, I've been working in television here in Australia. And I've been working on the biggest shows, The Voice. I think we all know what that is.
Wow.
Yes. I actually feel pregnant with my first son on The Voice. So he's a voice baby. So I then, you know, had my second child, and it was after my second son that a few months later I realized something was changing within me. And I thought I was just stressed. I thought it was just, you know, busy, you know, your mom of two kids. And then I had my first ever panic attack and I thought I was dying. I rang my mom and I said, something's happening. I can't breathe. And she said, no, I was waiting for this because I know what you're like. And you try and take on too much all at the same time by yourself. And I then realized that it was the beginnings of postpartum or postnatal anxiety. And it was very, very difficult for those next 12 months.
Wow.
I found myself not wanting to be alone, and not because I was going to harm my boys, but because I thought something would happen to me and that they would be left alone. So I was very, very worried all the time. There wasn't an off switch. And that was a bit of a problem, obviously.
Yeah.
So I was very fortunate to have my mom and my beautiful husband, my dad, of course, supporting me. And without them, I wouldn't have gotten through that. But in the midst of all that, I was desperate to find something because obviously I'm a seeker and I've always felt a sense of lightness within me. But I didn't realize that my divine breadcrumb, that very moment where I had my first panic attack, was actually the perfect moment for me to become enlightened. And so it was a very difficult 12 months. And in fact, it came back again about 12 months ago. And because if you don't solve the issues I find within your life, if you don't go back and actually resolve whatever feelings and emotions you haven't resolved, they will come back. And so when I found mindfulness, I was looking at Eckhart Tolle and I was, reading Michael Singer's book, and I suddenly realized, oh, I get it. I have been living in my mind. I haven't been living in the moment. And I've been so worried about what could happen in the future or someone doing something to my children that I didn't just think, okay, what's happening right now, right here? And so for me, the moment that I realized I am in a very grave state was the moment that I also realized something has to change. And the finding of the mindfulness for me was like opening a door to this beautiful space of light.
Oh, I love that.
That's beautiful. And for our listeners, I think, Mansi, you were talking about The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Some of these books have just been life-changing for me as well. And I think it's interesting what you said, that issues keep coming around if you don't deal with them. And we've talked about this a few times on the show, where life is like a spiral and the same things come up. And you might get to that point and think, I thought I already dealt with this, but it's going to get a little louder and bigger maybe the next time.
Absolutely. And I was listening to, because it was, a 12-month period where I really was shifting everything. All my belief systems went out the door because, I was used to being very responsible, very capable. I used to work with 300 crew in the jungle at 3 o'clock in the morning and was not anxious. And yet, two little children in a really safe environment in a wonderful country stressed my brains out. Like, I was just, this is hard. This is super hard. And more than that, I started to lose myself, and I started to, and I think a lot of mums do that. I think a lot of women, even if you're not a mum, I think you find yourself losing part of you if you take on too much of other people's needs and wants.
Very true.
And the mindfulness part of it says, just wait a moment, stay back in your place, in your little space here. What do you really need? What's actually more important for you? Because if I've said this before to so many of my girlfriends and other women, if your cup is empty, you have nothing to give.
Absolutely.
And so the mindfulness allows you to just stay in that moment, to just not judge yourself. If you're not feeling great today, don't do anything.
Exactly.
And accept that feeling too, and say to yourself, I don't need to feel good all the time. I can have a moment where I'm so tired. And it's been a big week and I just want to sit down with a cup of tea or whatever it is and watch anything, a Dick Van Dyke show, because I love that show, anything that will make me smile and laugh. And so I think a lot of us are trying desperately to hold on to all the reins, and we're making ourselves sick.
Oh, absolutely. So many things you said there. First of all, I love that you're like, yeah, have a cup of tea and watch TV. Sometimes you just need to, and we have to be okay with them. And we also have to be okay that there's a whole range of emotions and it's all okay to experience all of them. It doesn't just have to be joy and happiness.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, if you don't feel all of the range of emotions, is something going on.
Yeah, exactly.
Really blocking something that needs to be solved. And I had a moment where I actually did some hypnotherapy because at the beginning of this year, when the anxiety reoccurred again, the postpartum anxiety reoccurred. And it was because I realized two things. First thing was I was compromising myself too much. And I don't mean, my body or anything. I was compromising my inner self. So I wanted to make my family super happy and my clients super happy and my boys super happy. So I just basically dried the sponge, which is my spirit, to the nth degree.
Right.
And there was nothing left of me to even compromise. So I realized that when it reoccurred again, the postnatal anxiety, I need time out. So I took a week of just full hypnotherapy with a wonderful woman near close to Sydney. And I had an incredible moment in that hypnotherapy where I met, I guess I'll say it, source for me. So I was kind of and hypnotherapy is not like being a chicken.
believe me, we're on their page. Yes. I'm a big fan of hypnotherapy.
Yeah. It's a beautiful space where you're just super relaxed, and that person takes you to a place where you would not normally take yourself, obviously. And so I was feeling something quite deep, and I rose above my body and I rose out of my body and up over the building, and I kept flying high, high, high. And I reached this beautiful space where it was gold and warm. Oh. And I just remember having my arms out and just feeling absolute love. And I realized at that moment that I have always been loved, but that the source always loves you. That there's no other reason but love to be here.
Mm.
And I wanted to be that way and feel that way always. And so when I came out of that, I went for a big walk by myself, and I realized, okay, the next vow I give to myself is that I will be true to myself, that I won't compromise myself to the nth of my spirit.
Mm.
Oh my gosh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah, and that mindfulness, and in that sense, mindfulness has helped me, because I have to be mindful every moment to not start giving that away, because I'm pretty much a giver, I'm not a taker.
Mm.
And so it's hard as an intuitive empath to not give, because you feel everyone's energies. And so mindfulness brings me back.
Yeah. And it helps set the boundaries, because I'm the same way. You know, I'll just soak it up like a sponge.
And it's terrible, because, I mean, it's good. It's great for anyone else, because you're obviously there to listen to them.
But it can leave you drained for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So it feels like people around the world are waking up at a faster rate than ever before. How does mindfulness help you connect to your own spirituality?
I completely agree that we are waking up. And it's not everyone, because I don't think that everyone has had potentially the environment that they need mm-hmm. in order to wake up. Mm-hmm. So I was very blessed to have two parents that are very strong, passionate people. They're both adventurers. My parents are Spanish. They met here in Australia, and they went through the dictatorship in Spain. And so they came from a space where you must make changes. You must be the one to make the change.
Mm.
And so for me, when I grew up, if something was difficult, I would just say, well, it can't be as hard as my mom and dad went through, right? So I can do this. I can do this. And so I think that when we're waking up, if you don't have someone saying to you, there is a space to wake up to, then you're not going to wake up to it. And mindfulness is just a really kind of basic, fundamental way to bring people to a medium, to an alignment for themselves. So even if they don't get the spirituality side, they might get the fact that you don't have to be in 1,000 places at once.
Mm-hmm.
That you can just be on that one little line in the middle of your mind where you say, okay, from here I can choose to go left or right or front or back. Mm-hmm. But I'm always in that center spot, and you can always bring yourself back with a few breaths.
Mm-hmm.
But the enlightenment is only happening when I think you are fully aware that there is more to you than life. And so mindfulness is a beautiful kind of the first key to the door.
Mm.
And then once the door is open, I think you then instantly see all these other beams of light and orbs coming at you.
I love that.
Yes.
We were in Spain many years ago, and my grandmother had passed away in a house where we were sleeping. And I was there with my mom and my dad and my auntie and my uncle, and it was their house. It was my auntie and uncle's house. And she is very much not aware of things. She likes to live in a bubble, and that's fine. It's a beautiful bubble that she lives in. But my mom got very sick, and I had to give her medicine like every 3 hours, because my dad was very tired from the trip. So I said, okay, I'll do it. I'll get up every 3 hours. This is only a few years ago. And like I would put my alarm on for, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning and then 6 o'clock in the morning. Mm. And I kid you not, 10 minutes before every alarm would go off, this bright orb would turn up in the corner of my bedroom.
Wow.
And I realized, and to begin with, I thought, what is this? And then I realized, oh, it's my grandma. It's my abuela.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, you're freaking me out a bit, but okay. This happened over five nights. She would wake me up. And on the fifth night, I said, abuela, you got to stop. You're freaking me out, man. I get the message. I'm taking care of her, you know. And that next morning, I told Mum what had been happening. And she said, well, that's funny, because I literally just looked at the door and she was standing there, you know, leaning against it, smiling.
And oh, my goodness.
My auntie came in at the kitchen at that point and said, what are you two talking about? And Mum goes, should we tell? And I said, I don't know. And we said, well, this is what's happened. She said, don't tell me. I don't want to know. It freaks me out. It's like, oh, okay. So if you're not ready for that space, it will take longer to get to.
Right.
Yeah. And everybody has their own pace, their own journey.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is a subject I could talk about forever, but we can't. So I will move on, but we'll have to have you back and talk more about that at another time. So
yeah.
Why do you think it's so important to introduce mindfulness into the workplace? Which I love that idea, by the way.
So I worked in television for 20 years, as I said, and that you couldn't get any more stressful other than maybe a brain surgeon. Like, you know, it's full on. You know, when you start a show, it's full on from the beginning to the very end. And I saw so many people kind of trying to deal with that in the most extreme ways. And I'm, you know, we're talking drinking, drugs, whatever it is, mm-hmm. you know, anything else that's an extreme. And that's fair enough, because it's so stressful. And if you don't have any tools to bring into your life, you will go for whatever's the easiest option in front of you. And so I didn't get to the mindfulness until I left TV, which is really funny. Because of the postnatal anxiety. But now that I realize, oh my gosh, of course, I should tell everyone I know. Because the mindfulness will literally just say, okay, if we just stop now, everyone just stop, take a 10-minute break, and let's just reincorporate everything we know. So why be stressed about something that we have no control over, right? Let's talk about what we can do. Let's talk about what we have done. And then let's just take a moment and say, is this the best way forward? And mindfulness just gives you that place of acceptance. Okay, that didn't work. Let's think about it again. It gives you that space of patience, because you need patience in life. Mm-hmm. And that's really difficult when it's a fast-paced environment in a workplace. People just want things to get done fast. Let's go, let's go, let's go. And that doesn't work. In actual fact, if you bring mindfulness into your workplace, you will bring up your productivity, mm-hmm. because you will allow someone to take a 10-minute break where they can either meditate or sit outside and take a deep breath, and maybe three, and then come back to their work. You know, I love what Vishen Lakhiani is doing at Mind Valley. I'm not sure if you guys know about that.
No, I don't.
Okay, so he's doing some incredible things over at Mind Valley where they don't start work till 10. And he allows his workers to have an hour in the morning to do whatever they need to do, whether it's meditation, the gym, you know, anything that makes them prepared for the day.
Great.
And for me, that's a perfect place for a mindfulness start. But most places won't do that. So even just allowing your people, your workers, to have a 10-minute break every 2 hours,
right?
You know, and actually placing that into their workplace. And then maybe every week, just have a sit down and say, what's working, guys? What isn't working?
Right. I haven't worked in the corporate world in a while. I've been self-employed for over 20 years. But my last sort of exposure to that was, first of all, the environment. It was created to be a crisis-driven environment. It didn't have to be. It was created to be, because those in charge felt that motivated people. Mm-hmm. And then, so now you've got this crisis thing, you know, mindset going on, and everybody's crazed and running around. And then of course there's all the blame when things go wrong.
Yes.
So it was just this crazy, horrible environment.
Yes. And I think that starts from the top down. If
you
have, you know, I know someone right now who is dealing with a manager who is micromanaging.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why a lot of people micromanage is because they're afraid of their own power. They're afraid of how to actually manage someone. Mm-hmm. They're not sure because they can't sometimes manage themselves. So even if you're placed in a position of management, that doesn't mean you're a very good manager. It just means that you've done your job well enough, or that you've been at a company long enough, or mm-hmm. that you know the right people. It's a big combination of things. That doesn't mean that even if your name has the end thing manager, that you're a good manager of people. If you can manage people well, you can get the best out of them. You can do more things. You can inspire them. But if you are a manager that is driving everything from fear, that is super unhealthy mm-hmm. and inevitably will actually bring the company down. Mm-hmm. Because if you make decisions that are based upon fear, all of that fear is driven through the ranks. And so the manager under the manager is afraid of the manager. The person under the manager of the manager is afraid. It just goes down the line. And so you need to understand that people want to do the best. No one goes into a job wanting to do the least that they can, or most generally anyway, the least that they can for the most money. Most people do something because they want to actually achieve something. Mm-hmm. And if you have a manager that is simply running it like a dictatorship, like we're talking in Spain, that will do nothing but cause fear and angst. And I don't believe that we're on this earth to live in a suffering state.
I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah, I think that obviously some suffering occurs regardless, because we're feeling, mm-hmm. we're not plants, we feel things deeply, but I don't think that you need to go to work to suffer more.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with that. So switching gears a little, how did you come up with the name Rogue Minds? And please tell our listeners a little bit more about that.
Yes, so Rogue Minds, it's basically a state of mind. So if you're a rogue character, you are someone who thinks outside the square. You're someone that doesn't cross at the same place in the street that someone mm-hmm. else does because they're told to do it. They have a thought pattern that is flexible, that is adventurous, that is excited to try something new. And so I, many years ago, created a pilot for National Geographic called Rogue Tribes. And it was basically, we were going to follow a bunch of different people in their tribe, as it were. So they could have been like extreme surfers or climbers who did everything without ropes, that kind of thing. So basically a rogue mind is someone that comes at life and or a subject in a rogue way. So someone that comes at things and says, I don't need to do it the same way that everyone else has, because there's more ways than one. And so I love the fact that, you know, we had Chrissy Foreman on this week, and she's a beautiful artist, an intuitive artist, and she works from her mind and her spirit. And, you know, she believes that you don't have to have suffering. And I love that, you know, you don't have to suffer to be an artist. And I don't think you have to suffer to have a great business. And I don't think you have to suffer to be a great parent. I think you just have to have a spirit of want and generosity and to be genuine. I find that, you know, when I'm dealing with people, the more genuine you are in front of them, the more genuine they are with you. Because I think people are super smart. In fact, I know people are super smart. You know, I worked in TV a long time, and I've had to meet so many different people, you know, from consulates and prime ministers and presidents. You know, you meet all these incredible human beings, and the ones that leave a mark on you are the ones that are the most genuine with you. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that say something to your spirit. You know, they kind of leave a beautiful message in your heart, even without speaking sometimes, because there is a generosity within them that says, it's okay, I've got enough to give to you as well. You know, so I love that about a rogue mind, someone that says, I've got enough to share with you and someone else. So I'm talking about whether it's an adventurer that goes up Everest, or, you know, a beautiful mum that decides, I'm going to do a 10K run every month for my child who has epilepsy because I want to raise awareness. That to me is something incredible.
Mm, yes.
So yeah, that's what I'm trying to bring with Rogue Minds. So we're interviewing a few different people. We're going to interview some more artists. We're going to interview sculptors, people in business who bring mindfulness into that business, so organic farms, just incredible people who realize that there is more to life than the usual hamster wheel. And the hamster wheel is fine, by the way, and God bless a hamster. you know, you need hamsters, right? And you need the wheel, but you don't necessarily need to have everyone in the same hamster wheel.
Yes, absolutely agree.
So what are some tips that people can, maybe you can impart to our listeners to be more mindful?
So the biggest tips that I have for myself, number one, is breathe. Mm. That sounds really basic, but it's actually really important because I find that when I'm stressed, I'm shallow breathing. Mm-hmm. And it's really rushed and it's quick. You know, it's okay, I got to get this done. But when you're in a mindful state, even just for 1 minute, even if you say for 60 seconds, I'll put the alarm on my phone and I'm going to do some deep breathing and actually just sit with yourself. Just for 60 seconds, it does an amazing, amazing job. So in for four, out for four. And I even hold it for four, just so that you're thinking about that breath. So four, four, four. The other thing I do with my clients especially is that I make sure that they are accepting of who they are. So I do some on-camera training as well. I get people confident on camera. And one of my beautiful clients has actually now started her own travel show, which I'm filming for her as well. And she actually noticed the change that when she started being mindful of just being herself and being okay with who she was on camera, what she looked like, how she sounded, that created a sense of confidence within her. Because I'm not meant to sound like Oprah, and you know, someone else isn't meant to look like an Adonis. You're meant to look and sound the way that you are. You were born perfect in the sense of the universal floor. You know, that factory floor created everyone in the most perfect fashion. So there are no mistakes, which means that, you know, if you're accepting of yourself, you can get much further in your life. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't accept yourself, you're going to constantly battle that. You're going to try and change who you are, change how you sound, change the people that you're friends with, because they don't make you feel good. Like each time they don't make you feel good. Oh, I've got to get new friends. No, don't like that one. She makes me see things I don't want to see. Mm. So breathing, acceptance, and actually the biggest thing for me is trusting the universe.
Mm, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Big one.
Trust the universe, man. Like it's there for you. It is, you know, I mean, I feel like because I've had that incredible moment where I felt this beautiful divine warmth from, I think, source. I believe it's source. Mm-hmm. I know that we're here not just to be here. We're here because we were given it an incredible opportunity to come back to this earth and fix whatever things we didn't fix and maybe learn some more things that we didn't learn. And I believe in reincarnation, so I know that if I don't get it sorted now, it's going to come back again.
Yes.
I'm going to keep hitting that rock again and again and again.
Yeah, exactly. Well, kind of in the same vein, just as our last question, kind of looking at it through the lens of what you've learned about mindfulness, if you could go back in time, what advice would you give to your 13-year-old self?
Oh, that's a big one, huh? Mm-hmm. Okay. I would say stress less. Mm-hmm. I would say be happy with who you are and actually understand that you are exactly where you need to be, and to not... don't want the validation of other people.
Mm. Oh, that's a big one.
That is a big one.
Yeah, because I think for me, that was a big thing. I thought I needed to validate myself through other people. I thought if my mum and dad liked what I was doing, that was good. If my best friend thought I was cool, that's great. And then it kind of, when you get older, it gets worse because obviously then it's boyfriends or a husband or whatever right. It is, right? Or your bosses or whatever. And so I think if you just realize that there is no one else that is Monsi Azaguirre in the world. And she won't come back again in this way, in this shape or form. So as a 13-year-old, please chill out. Please like who you are. Don't keep changing yourself, hoping that someone else will validate you, but validate yourself. And know that there is so much love for you from within and without.
Mm. Oh, I love that. And that's a beautiful note to your 13-year-old self, but it's a beautiful note for the Monse now and for all of us out there.
Yes.
That's just such a beautiful way to end our show today.
Thank you, Carol and Deb. I really enjoyed it. And I hope that someone got something out of that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much. for listeners, as always, you can catch the show on our website, thedivinebreadcrumb.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Monsi, where can people find you?
So they can find me at Monsi Media on Instagram. And they can also find us, obviously, at www.mindfulliving.com. So that's LLL, mindfulliving.com.
Great. And we will put that in the show notes too, so that everybody can see it as well as hear it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, everybody. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, please tell a friend, leave us a review, send us an email. We love hearing from our listeners. And Monsi, thank you again for sharing your wisdom and your sense of humor and your very, very delightful personality.
Yes, thank you so much. Oh,
thank you. Thank you, ladies. Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. Have a great night, and we will chat with you next time.
Bye-bye, everybody.